Okay.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is 8 o'clock, it's Thursday night, this is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina, and I'm in studio tonight with beautiful, charming Bobby Bell. And we have a very special guest tonight, however, before we get there, how's your week been?
I've had a great week. What about you?
It's been interesting.
Tell us more.
I hesitate to say bad words on the air, so I'm just going to say interesting, and I'm hoping we can leave it at that.
So something you'll write about later.
Oh, yeah, more than likely. I've got, you know, it's just been, oh, my God, it's been one thing after another this week. And mm-hmm. Hey, who do you have coming up next week or week after on your
concert series?
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? We are really excited, and we were kind of working with our reservation list today and our prepaid list today, and it is sold out. We have Dave Stamey coming into town. Dave is an award-winning, multi-award-winning singer, songwriter, entertainer, performer. Was just nominated again for the 2015 Western Music Association Male Performer of the Year and Male Entertainer of the Year. That'll be announced, the final winners of that will be announced in November. But we've been wanting to host Dave for quite a while. He's on the road a lot. And finally this year, we found a date that worked, and it sold out.
Holy crap.
2 weeks from tonight.
Wow. I'm here on those nights.
I know. I know.
I would love to see some of these shows.
I know. They get filmed.
I do have the wonderful and lovely Russ Avison here with me on those nights.
You'll have great fun. He's
absolutely, because we have the horse sluts that night.
Yes, you do. And they're so excited. Ken Dacey and Penny, they can't wait to be on the show.
Yeah, they sent the bookie some emails, and they were pretty stoked.
They're very excited. Yeah. And you will have a great time with them.
So, and I'm going to have you introduce our guest tonight because
he hasn't moved up to the mic. Oh, the guest sitting here or the guest?
No, not the guest sitting here. I didn't turn his mic on because I'm going to hear him just snorking and all that.
Well, we have what he's talking about is my husband Jim is here, and normally he doesn't have a set of headphones on to at least listen to what's going on.
But tonight he does.
Tonight, at least he can listen in.
Oh, let me quickly go into this before we get started.
Sure.
First of all, let's talk to the Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing and Out West Boutique and Cultural Center in Newhall. And the number here, if you want to call and talk to our guest, which I'm sure you're gonna, he's been pushing it all day long, is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. And the exciting news that we have is that we did pick up a new sponsor that will be starting our first show in September. And we're not going to reveal yet who that sponsor is. There are going to be some people who are going to go, huh? And there are going to be some people who go, oh, really? So take it away, Bobby.
Okay. Well, we do want to introduce tonight's guest is Charlie LeSware. And Charlie and his wife, Dawn, reside in his hometown of Mesa, Arizona, where he divides his time between the performing arts director of the Sequoia Star Academy. He teaches a class on the history of Western film at Central Arizona College, and he also teaches film acting. But when he's not teaching or directing, and this is how you and I know Charlie, he is traveling throughout the United States, attending film festivals, moderating panels, or writing on different aspects of Western film and television. He's written 3 books on the evolution of the Western as seen on the silver screen and TV, and tonight we will be talking about the newest book that is hot off the press, Riding the Hollywood Trail 2, Blazing the Early Television Trail. Please welcome to the Writer's Block the Arizona official Western film historian, Charlie LeSware.
Hey, how are you? Hello, Jim. Hello, Bobby.
Hey, Charlie. What do you say?
Charlie.
Hey, I say it's good to be here.
Oh, man.
Or there, or wherever I am.
Well, you know, we always have a little bit of trepidation when we have call-ins because we never know if they're really going to be there. That happened with Dale, until we finally got a hold of him.
That's why I was on the computer all day. I didn't know either.
You're the man. Hey, look, there was somebody that tried calling in a little while ago, and if you really want to call back in, you can. I don't know if I hung up on you or not. I did. So if you want to call back, the number is 818-602-4929. And
so
there
was the one person, huh?
Yep, okay. That was probably
your
mini friend. I going through the book that you had sent me via PDF or whatever it was. That was your second rendition of the Cowboys in the TV.
The Ride in the Hollywood Trail.
Correct.
About the conversion over to television.
Right. I remembered that I had read your Tales of the Silver Screen Cowboys as well, and I just found it fascinating. And this other one I found really fascinating because, of course, I was born in 1949. And the evolution of the Lone Ranger up through Roy Rogers and Wild Bill Hickok and all of those guys. Just, I mean, I grew up with all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, the second book, it's a continuation of the first one, where we start with the first one, riding the Hollywood Trail, the first one, in 1905, obviously not with television, with Bronco Billy Anderson, and take the B-Westerns to their conclusion in 1955.
Right.
Now, in 1949, 1950, that's when they started converting over to television, and that's where this book takes up, is in that era with Hopalong Cassidy and the Cisco Kid, of course, Gene and Roy, Lone Ranger, all of the cowboys that started moving on over into television.
Right.
Some of them had it easy. Some of them didn't have it so easy.
Right.
It just depended on people like Gene Autry, who owned their product, Hopalong Cassidy, William Boyd, they owned their product. They could move pretty gracefully into television. But people like Roy Rogers, he didn't have it so easy because Herbert J. Yates there at Republic Pictures wanted to keep him there at the studio, and he had a tough time moving into television.
Right.
Lone Ranger, of course, that was a fictional character, as was Cisco Kid, so they didn't have as tough time. It was just basically picking who was going to play them on television. And, of course, then you had Gabby Hayes, who moved into television pretty easy, and his show was in New York, so as was a lot of television when it first started.
Right, right.
And let's see, Colonel Tim McCoy, who was a silent actor, silent star in cowboy movies, moved into the talkies. He actually had a pretty successful career in the early days of television. So it's a surprising book. It's surprising who was successful, who didn't make it into television, but tried. Mm-hmm. You would have thought would have done pretty good. And it's I take you along for the ride.
I have a question for you, Charlie. We're going to talk about the book in more detail, but I'd like to do a little backstory on you, if we could, for just a moment. I'm really curious about how you found this love and passion for early Western film and TV. You know, how did you get started in your interest in the West?
I have always had a love and passion for film in general. As a lot of people listening are probably tired of hearing me tell the story that my dad installed a Lazy Susan, you know, one of those things you could revolve around.
Yes, yes.
And like a lot of people will use that on a dinner table to revolve around the dinner table so that you don't have to reach over people to get something to eat. And he put a Lazy Susan, installed it between our dining room and our family room, and he put a television on it so that when it was time to eat dinner, he would rotate the television into the dining room, and it was nobody talked. We would watch television. And when we were done with eating, it was rotated back into the family room, and we continued watching television. So the television was always on. You know, today, you know, it would be the equivalent of video games, I guess. I don't know. But we were always watching television, and the thing that was generally on was Westerns.
Yep.
You know, back in that time, there were 30-some-odd Westerns on television, so the chances of what we were watching being a Western were pretty good. And when it wasn't a Western TV show, they were showing Western films on the independent stations. You know, you had a whole bunch to choose from. You had all of maybe four stations at that time to watch. You had ABC, NBC, CBS, earlier on maybe the DuMont network. But then you had a local independent station that ran the old films. At that time, being an old film may have been 10, 20 years old at the most. The Hopalong Cassies, when you think about it, or the Roys or Jeans, wouldn't have been any older than maybe 10 or 20 years at that time that they were showing on television, but they would have those. And so we were continually watching movies, and it doesn't necessarily mean that they were Westerns. They could have been Johnny Weissmuller as Tarzan. They could have been Jungle Jims. They could have been Boston Blackie. They could have been anything that they could run on television. And if you remember, maybe you don't because maybe you're not that old, but I am. And you could, you know, TV would run all the way to 1 or 2 in the morning.
And then, right. Then you'd get the eagle eye.
Yeah. Now, your very first book, The Legend Lives On, Book 1, that contained interviews and personal stories from folks like Rex Allen and Roy Rogers and such. How did you get in front of these? Like, how did you get in front of some of these folks to actually sit down and, you know, start to talk to them?
Well, that's how I got into the Western genre. Is I loved all genres. My first love, right off the bat, was more the horror and the science fiction as a little kid. And, of course, the Westerns, because I would always go to the Audie Murphy movies and the John Waynes and the R.G. Springsteen produced films of the 60s and A.C. Lyles. You always had those. So I always loved the Westerns, too. So I would, you know, you always had the Westerns and the American international horror films you'd go see and the beach party movies, those type of things. But
Dracula.
Sort of like talking to a Courtney Joyner or Ed Erdelak. I think you all have this fascination for the horror supernatural.
How I got into the Westerns was I was working for an advertising agency in Phoenix, well, Mesa, Arizona. It's a suburb of Phoenix. And I was working for an advertising agency, and the first person I had anything to do with in the way of Westerns was Rex Allen. I was assigned to go down to Tucson to have him do a television commercial. I was producing a television commercial, and so they sent me down there. And I can't even remember what it was for, and he thought it was going to be just a voiceover. So he didn't dress for the part, and he would come in, as I remember, and we're going back to 97, 98, and he was coming into town, as he would do, to a studio to do a series of voiceovers. He would do that once or twice a week from his home in Sonoyta. And he just happened to be coming in that day, so that was the day we would travel down to Tucson to do this commercial. And he wasn't dressed to do the on-air commercial, but he said, okay, no problem. So I had him look at this 30-second commercial, and I thought, oh, he's looking at it, and he's going to memorize this 30-second commercial, and then he's going to do it. And we're probably going to have to do it several times in different takes because he's not going to memorize a 30-second commercial. Well, within 15 minutes, he had the thing memorized. We did it in one take. And I can't leave this guy alone. This is Rex Allen. I don't know when I'm going to see him again. I don't know if I'm ever going to meet any of my cowboy stars that I ever grew up watching again. So I had him do it three or four different times, saying, well, let's do it this way, let's do it that way. And he did it perfect each time, so I couldn't hold him any longer. So we started packing up, and I said, I'd like to ask you one question before we go. And he was very good-natured, and I said, you know, people had Gabby Hayes, and they had Smiley Burnett, and Pat Buttram, and people like this as the sidekicks, and you had Slim Pickens, and you had Buddy Ebsen, and you even had Alfalfa in one picture. as your sidekicks? How did you get them in you know, how did you get Republic to put them in your pictures? And he just he looked at me and he got that Rex Allen grin on his face and he said one word. He said, "Money." Well, that was I didn't know that within I said 97. This would have been 87. This would have been about 87. And I didn't know that within a couple of years I would be doing panels with these people.
Yeah.
In 91, I was asked to do an interview with John Smith from Laramie for a TV show called The Arizona Cowboy, a local TV show. And so I did an interview with John Smith at an old town called Rawhide, which was here in Scottsdale. Since then, they've moved it to a casino out south of here. But I did the interview with John Smith, and then the next year I was dividing interview duties with the Festival of the West with Bill Rose, who was a host of a movie every Saturday on local TV here. So I would be doing like a Thursday and Friday, and he'd be doing Saturdays and Sundays. But the way I got that is I was doing commercials for the Festival of the West, and Mary Brown, who had produced the Festival of the West, and I got it talking, and I said, "Who are you having do the show?" And we got John Smith, we have Lash LaRue, we've got Irish McCullough, and I started talking to her about these people and telling her about their history. She goes, "You know all that about them?" Well, that's all I grew up learning. I didn't go to school. I ditched school every chance I got to watch television. You know, my mother would always say, "What are you going to do with all this trivia that you're accruing? You're not learning anything else." Well, here I am.
Here's become a writer.
So that's how I got into it. I did Festival of the West for 22 years, and along the way I collected some other festivals. And in 98, I was talking to Johnny Western about something he did with Gene Autry, and he said, "You ought to write a book, and if you write that book, I have an idea. I'll be in the book, so write the book." Well, the next year I had the book in 99, and he wrote the foreword for it. He was kind enough to write the foreword, and the title of it, The Legends Live On, came from Buck Taylor, an incident that happened in his life. And by the way, the book is out of print. You can get the book on Amazon. I don't know where they're getting these copies that they're selling for like $100. I wouldn't buy it for $100, but
we had one copy left, Charlie, and somebody that you know that's near and dear to you. We had a wonderful conversation with this gal, and she scooped it up. So even Out West doesn't have one of that book anymore.
And Charlie,
I think they got $100 for talking about. She's a great person, and yeah. I hope she enjoyed the book.
Oh, but we had a wonderful time meeting her.
Yeah. Well, maybe I don't know who it is. I don't know. But anyway, I hope she enjoys the book. But anyway, the bottom line is the book is coming out on ebook this next month, and it's going to be revised, and it's going to be updated. So it will be available, but only on ebook, and it'll be like a whole new book because it'll have new chapters and a whole lot in it. When I wrote the book, I hadn't met Robert Fuller yet, and so I had met John Smith. I hadn't met Robert Fuller, and since then, Bob and I have become fairly good friends, and we enjoy each other's company, and so I'm going to have some more about an update with Bob Fuller in there. So, and some other things with Ben Johnson and so forth. So look for that coming out next month.
Wow.
With Amazon.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know you must have a question, Jim.
No, I never have questions.
Yes, you do.
Okay. What amazes me is that you're such a multifaceted kind of guy. Talk to us about Hotel Balderdash.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
You shouldn't have put it in your bio then.
nobody remembers Hotel Balderdash. Well, they do actually. But they don't remember me on Hotel Balderdash.
And why would that?
They remember Cannonball. They remember Harvey. But there's very few people that remember me on Hotel Balderdash. Hotel Balderdash was way back when. And matter of fact, by the way, Hotel Balderdash is still going on. Larry John and Randy LaVoie are still doing it. They're doing it on Maui. So you can see it on the Internet, and they're doing a fine job of carrying on that tradition. But Hotel Balderdash was a local kid show back in the days when there were local kid shows. Unfortunately, children today don't have local kid shows because it's cheaper to feed them the stuff that toys are made of.
Right.
And that's how, you know, that's how toys are sold. The toy companies will go to a distributor and say, look, you invent the cartoon, we have the toy, and then we'll sell it to the TV stations. They'll give us X amount of time on the TV station for free, and then we'll buy the time to sell our toys on there. And that's how it works. So why put on a local kid show where they have to pay the local talent? It just, it doesn't make sense. But we had a local kid show, and you would show cartoons, and we would do antics on the show, and then we could go out to the openings of supermarkets, or we could go out for Christmas time and put on shows, and the kids loved, you know, seeing us out there make personal appearances, and it was a lot of fun. And I was single at the time, and it was a lot of fun being single too, because let's just leave it at that. But anyway, the three of us had there was Cannonball, and who was the hotel manager at Hotel Balderdash. There was Harvey, who was the bellhop, and there was Raymond, who was the mean kid, so to speak. And it was based on a local show here in Phoenix that was successful for 40 years, pretty much, called the Wallace and Ladmo Show. And they were successful, and they were on an independent station here, so they still celebrate that show here. That's an iconic show here. But we didn't have that luck because we were on an ABC affiliate, and whatever ABC said went, and they used the same tapes over and over every week, and there's virtually nothing left of those days on the show, mm-hmm. because they would just erase the tapes every week. Later on, they still saved the tapes after I left the show, and I did leave the show in about 77, and they continued the show. So people do remember Harvey and Cannonball, but they really don't remember me too much. But Larry and I created the show, and then we brought Randy on. We had a hard time finding that bellhop character, and he was just perfect. But he and Larry, Cannonball and Harvey, have continued the show. And so it's basically now the Harvey and Cannonball show. But, yeah, we would go out, and we had a great time with the show. And for kids that were in their early 20s to have their own show, and the way we got that show was we had no money in our pockets whatsoever, and we traveled up from Provo, Utah, which was a 60-mile jaunt from Provo to Salt Lake City, and they had a TV show, a kid show called Fireman Frank on Channel 4, which had been on for 10 years, so we didn't even approach them. That was an iconic show at that time, so we approached the other two stations. There were only three stations in Salt Lake City, and we approached the other two stations for a possible afternoon show because we knew people watched, the kids watched the morning show, Fireman Frank. And neither one of the other stations, long story short, or even longer, whatever, weren't interested in our concept. So we decided we'd go over to Channel 4, the ABC affiliate, and see if they would be interested in an afternoon show. Well, within a half hour of going over there, we were sitting down talking to the program director, the president of the station management there, and the commercial director. And we were sitting three kids, 21 and two 21-year-olds and one 23-year-old, sitting in front of all three of the head honchos of the station, pitching our show. And within a month, we did a pilot, and we were on the air within 3 months.
Wow. That's
because they had fired Fireman Frank that morning.
Oh, wow. Timing is everything.
And so the show was on for about 12 years, and it was so popular. During that time, they had ABC introduced a show called it wasn't Good Morning America at the time. Well, it was AM America.
Right.
If you remember when AM America started with David Hartman.
Right.
And we were so popular, they didn't know what they were going to do with our show, which ran from 6:45 to 8:40 every morning with us and cartoons. And so what they did, because we were so popular and people were writing articles in newspapers and they were calling up the station what was going to happen because they were going to introduce this new show in the morning, ABC was, they put the first part of AM America on from 6 to 7, us on from 7 to 8, and the second part of AM America on from 8 to 9. That's how popular we were, and we were getting the 60% of the overall audience, all ages, in the morning. We were beating out the Today Show, Captain Kangaroo, Electric Company. We were beating out everybody in the morning. But then the station wasn't doing so well with their news and stuff, so ABC said, we're going to pull the affiliation unless you put the two halves together, and that was our death knell. They put us on from 6:30 to 7, and that was the end of the show. So, but you asked, so I told you. That was it.
Well, look, we're going to take a real quick break. I'm going to give you some music, and we'll be back in a few. And we're back. If you're just now joining us, how come you waited so long? This is the Writer's Block on LATalkRadio.com. And I am Jim Christina here with Bobby Jean Bell. We have Charlie Lesueur on the line with us. And the Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing and Out West Boutique and Cultural Center. With a new sponsor soon to be coming.
Soon to come.
Number here is 818-602-4929. Again, that's 818-602-4929. Okay, Charlie, I got a question for you. All right.
Okay.
This is the deal.
Anyway, getting back to Hotel Balderdash. And then in,
do we have to?
Yeah, go ahead with your question.
I remembered as I was reading the Blazing the Early Television Trail that I had read your first book, the first one in that series, Tales of the Silver Screen
Cowboys.
Okay.
If you're counting Legends Live On, that is.
Well, but
you are correct, sir.
Oh, well, you know, I'm not always and not very often, so thank you.
Okay.
And some of the stories you tell about the early Western actors in the studios and the Republic studios and the Paramount hordes and everything seemed to have been just so messed up for some of these guys. How did you manage to get all this information into one neat little package?
I am just lazy, so I write small books.
Ah, well, you seem to. You have a lot of really interesting information.
That's enough. I'm done. In small books, they don't seem so small when I'm writing them. It's only after I'm done. You know, what I do is I write books that I would like to read.
Okay.
A lot of times people put stuff in books I don't care about. I want to get to the nuts and bolts. I want to get to the stuff that... I want to get to the important stuff. I don't care a lot of times where somebody...
We have a call, Charlie. You want to talk to somebody?
I don't care about their aunts and uncles.
We got a call for you, Charlie. Hang on.
Okay.
Hi, this is the Writer's Block. Who am I speaking to?
Hi there. This is Phil Darcy in California.
Well, hello.
Hi.
Thanks for calling.
How are you?
We're good. How are you?
I'm very good. Who am I speaking to?
My name is Jim.
Jim?
Yes.
I got Charlie's Facebook announcement about the book. And Charlie and I went to school together for many years, starting from the third grade. And I just have a question for either you or him.
Okay.
Up here where I live in the Sierra Nevada Mountains, or in the foothills, there's a place called Ghost Mountain Ranch.
Okay.
Now, Ghost Mountain Ranch used to be the set for the TV show The Virginians. Now, in Charlie's book, Riding the Hollywood Trail, does he have anything in there pertaining to the old TV show The Virginians?
I don't know. Let's ask him.
Okay.
Charlie, did you hear that question?
Oh, you know what? Oh, merge calls. Here we go. Charlie, you there?
Yeah.
Okay. I have an old friend of yours on the phone.
Yeah?
Phil, are you there?
Hey, Charlie. This is Phil in California.
Phil in California.
You
Phil
know
there? Hey, Phil.
From Edison School back in third grade.
Absolutely. Where have you been? I've been waiting for you, Phil. Third grade, Doug. Well, that's a long time. Was it something I said?
No. I do reenactments. I drive a stagecoach from Placerville, and we do a thing called Highway 50 Wagon Train, where we go from Zephyr Cove in Lake Tahoe up to Placerville.
Yeah?
But anyway, the question I have, and I think I sent you a picture of me as a sheriff holding a hangman's noose. And there was an old Western facade in the background.
Yeah? Sent that to me yesterday or so, didn't you?
Yeah, it wasn't too long ago. Now, that's Ghost Mountain Ranch. It used to be the set for the TV show, The Virginian.
Uh-huh.
My question is, in either of your books, do you have any information on... that particular set.
In my book on the Virginian?
Yeah.
Anything that will have to do with the Virginian will be... Oh, what a good segue.
Uh-huh.
Anything that has to do with the Virginian, Phil, would be in my next book, because that will start talking about the next
coming.
Generation of television Westerns. This first book pretty much just talks about the early days of the Westerns up to 1955. And the Virginian, that's in the 60s. So we would take that from 55, where the more adult Westerns, Wyatt Earp and Cheyenne, Gunsmoke, they took over, and then they got more adult as time went on in the 60s with the Virginian and High Chaparral and Bonanza and those shows. So that will be in the next book. It's a progression. I want to go with the progression. And that will be I'm going to be doing with the next book.
Okay, sounds great.
All right.
That's all I basically have, and I wish you the best, though, buddy.
Yeah, hey, I wish I was coming up there to California, but that just kind of fell through.
I know, you said you weren't going to Grass Valley. I'm just a hop, skip, and jump from Grass Valley. I go there at the fairgrounds for the draft force.
Yeah.
Competition, darn it.
Yeah, well, I hope I see you before the next 50-some-odd years.
tell me about it. Well, listen,
right.
It was fabulous to talk to you.
All right, Phil, it's good talking to you, man.
And I will keep in touch with you on Facebook.
All right, hey, appreciate it, Phil. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for the call, Phil.
All right, take care. Yeah. All right.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Now, Charlie, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
In this new book, the one that we're talking about, of course, you hit on some of my personal heroes. You hit on Hoppy and Gene and Roy. And we're looking at our clock, and we know time is ticking away here. Can you kind of briefly talk about, why was Gene able to have music in his TV shows? And Roy and Dale really didn't.
Well, I talked with Cheryl Barnett, Rogers Barnett, which is...
Yeah, we know Cheryl.
Yes.
You know Cheryl, yeah, of course.
We do.
And Roy had such a hard time with Herbert J. Yates, that was the president of Republic Pictures, trying to get out of his contract. He wanted to do... He would sign a contract with Republic re-up in 1950 if Herbert J. Yates would let him do television as well. Well, this was at a very bad time for the film industry, in that the government was telling them that they had to get rid of their ownership in theaters. If you have looked at the history of theaters, there were the Fox Theaters, Paramount Theaters, the Rialto Theater.
Right.
And they were all owned by film companies. And so in this way, they could control what was being shown in the theaters. And they could block, buy, and put into the theaters. And the smaller companies didn't really have a chance to put their product into the theaters. Well, it didn't really affect Republic too much because they were a smaller company anyway. But they still had a good product that they could put into television themselves. And Herbert J. Yates saw that he had a chance to block sell on television the older product of the Westerns, the Hoppies, or not Hoppies, but the Jeans that he owned for Republic, the Roy Rogers, the Three Musketeers, anything that they owned, they could sell to television, which would be hard for Roy to sell any new product to television, hence the Roy Rogers show. You know, well, why would we want to see, why would they want to buy my product from Republic if I let Roy Rogers have his own television show?
Mm-hmm.
That would be a hard sell. Mm-hmm. So he was trying to keep Roy Rogers off of television. So therefore, he was when he realized that Roy was bound and determined to be on television, he was they went back and forth in court. He would put an injunction on Roy. We can't have you do this. We can't have you do this. He went even so far as to let Roy appear on Gabby Hayes' television show in New York. And I asked Cheryl, why did he let him go to New York to appear on Gabby Hayes' show if he was so dead set against Roy appearing on television, or any of the studios letting their stars appear on television? And what she told me is that he had to thank Herbert J. Yates on the show for allowing him to appear on the show, and that way it was kind of an appeasement all the way around. He thanks Herbert J. Yates, makes Herbert J. Yates sound like he's, you know, this great benefactor. But at the same time, Herbert J. Yates lets him appear on the Gabby Hayes show in the hopes that Roy Rogers would come back and sign a new contract. Well, it didn't work that way.
Right.
So he kept him stalled in the courts for a long time. And that ate up Roy's money. That ate up his money. He wasn't the businessman that Gene Autry was. When Gene Autry came back from the war, he let it be known that he didn't want to stay with Republic Pictures. And the only reason he did six more pictures for Republic is because he owed those pictures to Republic from when he left, and Yates was not going to let him out of doing those pictures. So he had to do those pictures before he left the studio. Well, when he finally did those pictures, he not only left the studio, he took all the production people with him. And he had already signed a contract with Columbia Pictures for his own production company, Gene Autry Productions, that would be released through Columbia, but they didn't own his production company. They just released his product.
Wasn't that Flying A?
Flying A Productions is what released his television show. But his productions through Columbia Pictures, those were Gene Autry Productions. Flying A was his television arm.
Right.
So adding music then was
so he had
expensive.
The money.
Yeah, okay.
He had the money. Gene was a smart businessman. He was first and foremost a businessman, and then he was a cowboy second.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Roy was a cowboy. He was a singing cowboy who was in business as a singing cowboy. Gene was a businessman who one of his businesses was being a singing cowboy.
Right.
I asked Dick Jones once, who was great friends with Roy Rogers, but he worked under contract to Gene Autry. I asked Dickie Jones once, what was the difference between the two of them? And he said, Roy was a good friend, and Gene's checks never bounced. So getting back to your question, why didn't Roy have any music? He couldn't afford it.
Okay.
He had just a couple of songs in there besides Happy Trails to You, which they own, they could have that in there. They did that at the end of every show. I mean, that was their signature song.
Right, Dale wrote
but
that.
Yes, Dale wrote that. But besides that, they couldn't afford to have any music. So when you see their TV show, there's no music in their TV show, whereas Gene's show were basically nothing but mini features.
Right.
And the other reason that he got along well with the film companies is, and it's in the book, it's in the chapter on Gene, is he wrote a letter to the film companies saying that they had nothing to fear from him. He never referred to his TV show in the letter as a TV show. He referred to his TV show as mini features.
Right.
Yeah. That chapter is...
He referred to them as mini features. And at the end of his TV show, he always said, as long as he was making movies, he always said at the end, be sure and see Gene and Champion
right.
in their newest feature film coming to a theater near you.
Yeah,
it
cool.
was more or less like a 30-minute promo for their next
feature. Their next movie. I remember seeing that as a kid.
Yeah.
So basically, he worked hand-in-hand with the film companies.
Right.
Roy, on the other hand, fought with Yates, and eventually he won to where he could be on TV, but a couple years later, that was overturned, and Yates actually won. But by that time, he was already on TV and was a success. But Yates won to where he could go ahead and show Roy's product, old movies on television.
We have to ask you, especially now that we're really looking at the clock, Charlie, one of the most important questions that we love to ask on this show of all of our writers is, do you ever have a writer's block? And if so, how do you handle it?
You know, I don't know if it would be a writer's block or just getting plain lazy. I think all a writer's block is just being lazy.
Well,
that's all
be.
A writer's block is. If someone says, I've got a writer's block, it's just being plain lazy. The hardest part of writing is sitting down and doing it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Marshall Terrell, have you ever heard of Marshall Terrell? Marshall Terrell has written two excellent books on Steve McQueen.
And
one on Ed Burns and a couple of other books. He's an excellent writer, very successful writer. He told me once, you just sit down and you write. It doesn't matter what you write, you just sit down and you do it. Hence my Facebook messages. you just sit down and write. That's all you do. So this book that I just released, by the way, I started writing this book about 10 years ago, and I had it 98% done.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a very young, naive person. I didn't save any of it, and my computer went blitz one night and erased the whole thing.
Oh.
I learned from that experience. Otherwise, this book would have been done
Doubtless.
Years ago.
Doubtless.
But you sit down and you just have to do it. That's it. It's just writer's block is just an excuse. You just write, and out of all those little gems that you put down, there's something there that you can use.
Now, that's the first time I've heard that.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. And I know that you do a lot of festivals and you make appearances. What festivals are coming up where people can come and enjoy you?
I'm glad you asked. This September, on the 18th and the 20th, we have the Western Heritage Festival at the Boise Stage Stop, which is in Idaho, and got a great lineup there. Bob's going to be there, Robert Fuller, Alex Cord, Dan Haggerty, Don Collier is going to be there, good old Don, and Roberta Shore. You know, speaking of Hotel Balderdash, Roberta Shore... It's funny, we were doing a personal appearance once, and there was a very attractive woman who had hired us to do this personal appearance. And she said, this is going back to about 1976.
She was a Mouseketeer.
She also did all those movies with Annette.
Right.
She did The Shaggy Dog, and she was the Virginian.
And the Virginian,
she was the daughter,
right.
Judge Garth's daughter. And in 1976, we were getting ready to go on to do an appearance on that we had been hired to do for this kid show. Here we are in our little kids' outfits, me with a little white wig and a sailor suit, being a spoiled little kid. And this very attractive woman said, well, I used to be in show business. And we knew her as Bobby. That was the name, this Bobby. And I said, well, what did you used to do? She says, oh, I used to do some movies for Disney, and I had a TV show called The Virginian. And I looked at her, and I said, you're Roberta Shore. And she said, yeah. So she looked at me like, you know who I am? Wow. I go, are you kidding me?
God,
and now, you know, everything comes back around again. So,
I think everybody was in love with Roberta Shore back in the 60s.
I preferred her over Annette, frankly.
Oh, yeah.
But I thought, Tommy Kirk, you're crazy. It's Roberta Shore. Anyway, so I thought that was funny that she, oh, I used to be in show business. So it's a Roberta Shore. Anyway, so we've got that coming up. That's September 18th, 20th in Boise. And that's a great lineup. Then we have the Spirit of the Cowboy at the Billy the Kid Western Film Festival in Hyco, Texas. And again, that's with Bob, Robert Fuller, Dan Haggerty, and Alex Cord. Ken Farmer and Buck Steinke, who are great authors. If you haven't talked to them, you really should. They actually published my book. Burton Gilliam, who you probably remember from Blazing Saddles.
Mm-hmm.
He was the right-hand man to the one with the teeth. Slim Pickens. He was the right-hand man to Slim Pickens in that. That was one of his early bits, but Burton Gilliam, Dean Smith, who was an excellent stuntman. First movie was The Alamo with John Wayne.
Yeah.
Don Reynolds, who was the last Little Beavers in the Red Rider series, and Allison Balson, who was in Little House on the Prairie.
Right.
And then the biggie, which is the High Chaparral reunion. Now, this one, I just started this year. Again, Robert Fuller is going to be at that. Roberta Shore, Kent McRae, who was the producer of The High Chaparral, and his wife, Susan McRae, who was a casting director for a lot of stuff. Stan Ivar, who was one of those working actors you'd recognize. He did a lot of stuff. Rudy Ramos, who was in The High Chaparral. Stuntman Neil Summers. Boyd Majors, you know Boyd.
Oh, yes.
Oh, Boyd and I generally don't appear together because we pretty much do the same thing. But Boyd is there, and, of course, the great Don Collier from High Chaparral.
Oh, sure, wonderful. The foreman.
Wonderful.
Oh, yeah, he was one of the brothers, the Butler boys.
Yeah.
And what happens here is, and they added me 2 weeks before the reunion this year, 2015, and what happens is Boyd does the panel discussions there, and I do the webcast.
Oh.
So what I do is I get these people up to do a webcast, and it's like a one-on-one, and it goes all around the world. It's a pay-per-view, and it's like they forget that the camera's there, so they kind of tell me things that they normally wouldn't say on a Q&A.
Okay.
And some of them say stuff that, it's very interesting. So anybody out there that can't make it to the reunion, which is going to be at the Casino del Sol in Tucson and at Old Tucson at the location where they shot, look it up, the High Chaparral Reunion. They should get the webcast, and they will learn stuff on that, some of their feelings for some of their co-stars, and, you know, some of the productions and stuff that they normally wouldn't hear. It's really, really interesting.
Hey, okay, I have the question of the night for you, Charlie.
Okay.
Champion or trigger?
Well, first off, you'd have which champion and which trigger?
Well, it would be the first trigger and the second champion.
Well, you know, there were several triggers at the same time.
Right.
I hate to burst your bubble, but
and champions.
Do you remember Son of Paleface?
Oh, sure.
You remember the famous scene with Trigger and
with Trigger in the bed?
In the bed,
right?
Well, I hate to burst your bubble, but that wasn't Trigger.
Oh, I'm sorry.
that was Little Horse.
Oh,
now they didn't let people know that for a long time, but that was not Trigger. Trigger was held for the special moments. But that was Little Horse, who looked close enough like Trigger to be Trigger, so it was Trigger. As far as Trigger or Champion, just Trigger.
Oh, yeah. Better looking horse.
Come on. Let me tell you, I had my first my first dog was named Jill, which was a German Shepherd. I was too young to name it Bullet, so my parents named it, you know, Jill. But my first three dogs that I was old enough to name were all dachshunds, and I named them all Bullet. Well, they were shaped like bullets.
Yeah.
I think that's in your book, isn't it?
It is in the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, I was a Roy guy all the way. However, since I've gotten older, I've learned to appreciate Gene's movies when he moved to Columbia.
They were just a
leaner, meaner type of product, and I really enjoyed them. But, you know, Roy, what can I tell you, all the way. I mean,
good
he
for
was,
you.
He just what? He just Roy. I mean, what can I tell you? He was the man.
If the little short time we've got left, which is about a minute, you want to give us all your information about contacts, email,
yeah.
Facebook, all that.
Yeah. Yeah, please. Well, it's easy to look me up on Facebook. Just look me up by name, and then I have another site for fans of the Westerns. But just look me up on Charlie LeSueur on Facebook, and that'll guide you to everything you need. Now, Friends of the Hollywood Trail, right in the old Hollywood. Friends of, yeah, just look me up on there, okay? But anyway, as far as, I got so many websites here. But anyway, About the Old Hollywood Trail is my website.
Okay.
www.aboutheoldhollywoodtrail.com.
Okay.
And then Twitter, Charlie LeSueur, at Arizona Film Historian.
Oh,
so Twitter,
I see.
Charlie
okay.
LeSueur,
yeah.
Arizona Film Historian.
Okay.
And then just to let you know that the other day I was just made the film historian for the Scottsdale Museum of the West here in town, which is kind of the equivalent to the Gene Autry there over in Griffith
That's
Park.
That's very
I'm
cool.
I'm very proud
That's
of that.
That's very exciting. I know. You
so we'll be handling all the we'll be doing some film expos and stuff there. So
excellent.
Anyway, I'm very excited.
Well, good for you.
Well, so, this has sure been fun, Charlie.
It's been a great.
Well, I'm sorry I spent so much time on Hotel Balderdash.
Well, you know, we had to know, Charlie.
We could talk more about Westerns.
We had to know.
You leave us wanting more, so we'll just have to rebook you for next year.
So, anyway, it's been a pleasure.
It's been great having you on, and thanks so much. And will you consider coming back on with us again?
Anytime you want me, I'm here. I'm a monger for these type of things.
Well, cool. You know, just get ahead of.
No, anytime you want me, anytime you need something, just give me a buzz and I'll be there.
We may be doing
all
that.
All I do is I do Facebook and I sit here by the phone.
Thank you, Charlie.
Thanks, Charlie, so much for being on here with us.
Thank you, Jim. Okay. Thank you, Bobby. It's been a pleasure.
Take care. Oops, cut him off.
So we only have like a moment to make our ending comment.
We do. And I have to tell you that we have 507 Facebook
Yay!
Likes.
Yay! Thank you. Thank you
all,
to our
and
listeners.
Don't stop because we have 500 now.
No.
Let's just keep
more,
going.
More snacks.
More snacks. And in the immortal words of Mr. Court Joyner,
fight on.
And right on.
And right on. We'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week. Have a great week. Good night.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.